We are fighting to be on track on social spending, but we are also facing, as any country, we are facing the war in Ukraine, which had a huge impact on oil prices. And because of that, we had to spend more on subsidy for oil products. And we also had some challenges on security sector with the war in the east of the country, which led to exceptional spending.
The Democratic Republic of Congo faces a long list of challenges to its development, but the country's natural wealth has the potential to lift more of its people out of poverty and help the world make the transition to renewable energy. In today's program, a conversation between the DRC's Minister of Finance, Nicolas Kazadi, and Abebe Amro Selassie, the director of the IMF African Department. Their conversation took place as part of the Governor Talks series hosted by the IMF during the IMF World Bank Spring Meetings.
From a climate and green energy perspective, of course, the DRC plays a pivotal influence on the future of life on Earth, really. The Congo Basin's rainforest, of course, is an extraordinary treasure of biodiversity, but importantly, an incredible carbon sink.
Yes.
I've been told that it absorbs more carbon than the entire African continent emits.
Absolutely.
So it's also, I understand, a vital driver of rainfall in the Sahel and, my neck of the woods, the Horn of Africa, I understand. So what it is that you are doing as a country to preserve the rainforest, to preserve the Congo Basin?
Yes, in fact, it's important to know that we are representing like almost 10% of the total forest in the world, 60% of the African forest, and two-thirds of the Congo Basin forest. So as you said, we are pivotal on that aspect. And also, we are able, with peatland, we are able to stock over 30 billion of tons of carbon, which is huge. And we are doing far better than Amazonia, six times better than Amazonia in carbon sequestration. In the same time, the third main forest, the one of Southeast Asia, is absorbing less than what it is producing in carbon. It means that we are number one. In that regard, we are the most important carbon sequestration forest in the world. And that gives us a responsibility. But the problem is that our climate challenges, yes, it's very important for the world, very important for the people, but it should not go beyond our development agenda. You know, we want a sustainable development. And it is important for us to see that what we are bringing in the world in terms of climate challenges, fight for climate preservation, should go along with the development of the country. But as I mentioned, we are responsible, and what we are doing so far, we have on the normative side of the issue, we have a sustainable agriculture policy that has been adopted. We have a national energy policy that has also been adopted. Now we have recently worked on land and use of land planning policy. And we are also committed to promote low impact mining sector. And we have some decision that will be taken very shortly. And we also have a national forestry policy. On the programmatic side, we have decided to put 30% of our forests under protection. So we have that is already done. And the impact of that is that we have to deal with our people who live with forests, who live within the forest. It's a very not always easy. We have also managed to restore 8 million of hectares of forests, which have been degraded. That is something that we are doing currently. And we have also reviewed the concession very recently within the collaboration with the World Bank. We have been able to review all the forest concession, and we have listed and published all the contracts. And some of them have been cancelled, some concessions which were not compliant with the law. These are things that we have done recently. And most of all, now the forest sector is taken into account within the EITI. So now we have some commitment within the EITI linked to the forest. And we are publishing everything that we are doing in that sector. These are the main actions that we are undertaking.
I mean, the point that you made about the avoiding or minimizing the trade-off between development issues, of course, the country has, and maintaining the rainforest is, of course, an important one. Can I ask what, if any, support you're getting from
yes,
the international
community? Yes, if I was saying so, it is exactly because we don't get what we should get. Can you imagine that we represent 60% of the African forest and we receive only less than 5% of the climate finance given to Africa? It's not absolutely not fair. And we are talking about a country which is representing a bit less than 10% of the African population. So it means that with a demography which is very dynamic, it means that if we don't do what we have to do to bring a good development to those people, a sustainable development to those people, we will miss our objective. If we miss those objectives on forest, we miss for everybody, not only for the country.
But what, you know, this is an important issue. So why is it that you're not able to access more climate financing? Is it because you haven't put in place the structures to...
That's
I know it's not quite easy as easy to get the money. Or is it more on the supply side that...
On both sides, it is obvious that we have some issues, delivery capacity, which are weak. But also, we were this morning discussing on the reform of the MDBs. We think that also we need to see how the development assistance is brought to countries. The minimum is to say that now it has to be reviewed, the way we are delivering it. I remember when, at the time of the MDGs, there were some silo, like what you call fonds verticaux, like on HIV and education and others. These are the only one that brought some result, clear result on MDGs. Three or four of them, but the general cooperation did not bring any result in Africa. So now we have to see how we are going to reform the way we deliver assistance. And it is clear that at the time we are talking about common public good, we need to see how to be more proactive and more volunteer to change the situation. Let me give you one example on energy. Uh-huh. The country which has the highest potential in energy production has the lowest access to energy compared to other countries in the continent. This is simply not acceptable. You will say, yes, but it is the responsibility of the country. We understand. But we are a developing country. We know that we have issues, but that's a shared responsibility, especially when it is linked to climate challenges. And we need to find new ways to deliver assistance, new ways to bring energy to people and to go beyond our fragility, our weak capacity to find solutions. If we don't do that, maybe we will miss that as a country, but we will not be alone.
Very pertinent point, very pertinent point. Thank you for that, Minister. You know, beyond this incredible biodiversity I mentioned and being a carbon sink, helping keep global warming at bay as much as you can. The DRC, of course, is rich in transition minerals, as they're called. Huh? So the country holds about 60% of cobalt reserves worldwide and is the largest producer of copper in Africa and other critical metals. Huh? These are all the kind of mining outputs that are needed to move towards more use of electric cars and, you know, yes, all the other associated transitions that we need to make. So, can you say a little bit about what you are doing to, number one, you know, benefit from the increased demand for these goods, and number two, make sure that, you know, one of the big challenges in the DRC has been it's been excessively mining dominated and not, you know, not creating yes, enough yes, jobs, not
enough,
you know, for the rest of the economy. So if you could say a little bit about this challenge.
Okay, but if you allow, please let me come back for 1 second on what we said about climate finance, etc. We all agree that public funding will not bring all the solution to our problems, and it is obvious that we need to consider also private funding. And we are now working on carbon market. We want to raise funding on the carbon market, even if we see that the price that is given for Africa is still very low. We need to build capacity to be able to show that the carbon sequestration that we are providing mm-hmm. can be paid at a fair value. That is one thing, and we hope that with the program that we have with the World Bank, and I know that IMF is also interested in that, we will be able to raise the price of the carbon from Africa so that it can be more fair. And I'm coming back to what you said. Yes, on critical minerals, yes, obviously, we are also in the center of the subject at the world level because of cobalt, because of copper in a less level, even if we are the number one in Africa. But we only represent 4% of the world on the global reserve. But also in other products like lithium and
coltan,
the treaties, etc. And on that, yes, it is clear, it is obvious that we need to focus on local transformation because it has been shown that it is more profitable to do it locally in DRC than doing it in the US or in China, in Poland or anywhere. So we have to take advantage of that for many reasons. But the key reason is that we have noticed that so far we have never been able to reduce the number of poor. Even if we can reduce the poverty incidence, but the number of poor is still growing. And the only way to change that is to have local transformation that can create more jobs, because the mining sector is not enough to create more jobs. And that is why it is very, very important. And we are the crossroad. It is a given opportunity for us to take that. And we are working on that. We are working on that. As you know, we are very far in our partnership with countries like Zambia, the US, and others on the battery value chain. We expect to make some tremendous progress in the coming month or years. But we already started in another area on the treaties, the coltan, tungsten, and tantalum. On that, we have a new partnership with a country which is called Emirates, UAE. And with that country, we have managed to go together jointly on production and on transformation. And now we have already signed some agreement that we will know because we are now publishing all our contracts, mining contracts, that is clear. And we will transform some of them locally. And this will bring a big change, because we are planning to have the biggest smelter of the treaties in Africa and the second one in the world, in DRC, in the coming month. The work will start very shortly. And that will change. And after the treaties, we hope to go on cobalt and other critical minerals. So that's very important. And that's the most affordable way to bring structural change, diversification of the economy. Beyond that, we still have the challenge to bring diversification in agribusiness, which is the future of the country, because mining will end after some decades. But on the agribusiness, it is coming slowly, but we also have a long process that we are going on.
You know, my turn to rewind the clock a little bit to a point that you've been making repeatedly, which is an important measure you've taken is promoting transparency and publishing all the contracts, production sharing contracts that you're entering into. Can I ask, I mean, because this is a big challenge in many other countries in the region, as a Minister of Finance, you've of course seen the benefit, but before this, how did you convince politicians, how did you convince the companies that this is needed? And if you could say a little bit about what the political economy of doing this reform was.
Let me tell you, when there is a will, there is a way. And we have a strong political will in the country. If it was not the case, we would not come to the point that where we are now. So it's not always easy, but we are fighting. And as you know, we have some issues with some companies, two or three, but we are dealing with that and we are fixing them one after another to bring more transparency. There's no other option for the country.
Absolutely, I agree. I think, having the political will to make this priority, I think, is the starting point, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So, you know, going back to our discussion on, you know, climate change, can you say a little bit about how already, if that's the case, climate change may be impacting DRC? I mean, we've seen from time to time, of course, natural disasters there. Can you say a little bit about how you're dealing with that? What kind of measures you're taking to in your budget and, you know, policy formulation to counter that?
Yes, it's sure that we are bringing a lot on climate challenges to preserve the world from big climate change. And what is happening in Congolese forest can affect you in Ethiopia. Maybe if you decide to retire there one day, it is important for us to work today. That's sure. But at the same time, we are among the most affected countries by climate change, and that's another problem. And we have some programs. We were talking about how we use land, how housing, new program in housing, in land management, etc., because we have issues on agriculture. I mentioned that. But it is clear that we need more funding for that. In our estimation, we consider that the funding gap on climate issues is around 300 billion by 2030. That's our estimation. It means that there is a lot of things to do. But what we can bring is even more than that. I mentioned a carbon market. On carbon market, we can generate a lot of money. If we consider a price of $3 per ton, we will be around 450 million per year. If we consider $50 per ton, we'll be around 7.5 billion a year. If we consider $120 per ton, we'll be over 18 billion. It means that we have a lot to do, to bring, and that should not be an issue, but we just have to work as we are doing with our partners and make things change in the country and for the world.
Thank you, Nicolas. Finally, you know, DRC has expressed interest in getting support from the Resilience and Sustainability Trust of the IMF, the new facility that the IMF has to support countries facing adaptation and mitigation challenges. As we enter into those discussions, what do you expect to be the main challenge? Is it identifying the reforms that are required, or is it more the capacity side that you're worried about and are working on? If you could say a little bit about that.
No, on the capacity side, I think that what is important is to move on. No matter where you start from, the most important thing is just to continue to progress. And I think that we'll find a solution, whatever the level of capacity is when we start. But the most important challenge is exactly to find the good planning of what can be done within the program, within the 18 months, I think, of the program. That is at the center of the discussion that we started already with the fund.
Nicolas Kazedi, Minister of Finance for the Democratic Republic of Congo, thank you so, so much for making time for us today. Really very, very insightful comments.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you very much, Abid.
That was the Minister of Finance for the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nicolas Kazadi, and IMF African Department Head, Abebe Amro Selassie. Their conversation took place as part of the Governor Talks series during the IMF World Bank Spring Meetings. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.